Our second scripture reading this morning is, as I said before, Jeremiah chapter 17, verses 5 through 10. This is what the Lord says: "Cursed is the man who trusts in man, who depends on flesh for his strength, and whose heart turns away from the Lord. He will be like a bush in the wastelands. He will not see prosperity when it comes. He will dwell in the parched places of the desert, in a salt land where no one lives. But blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord, whose confidence is in him. He will be like a tree planted by the water that sends out its roots by the stream. It does not fear when heat comes. Its leaves are always green. It has no worries in a year of drought and never fails to bear fruit. The heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? I, the Lord, search the heart and examine the mind, to reward a man according to his conduct, according to what his deeds deserve." Keith, we're by the river.
Come and sit by the river if you would. Seek that beautiful stream. Nice song. Well, Florida was great. It's warm. People there that we know. Racing going on. We weren't there. I have no idea what it's really like, but it was nice. A lot of things have happened this week. This is probably one of the more interesting weeks that our church really has had in its long 104-year-old life, or however many years it's been here. Connie and I were already questioning if this was a good time to leave, and then when we heard that Ed passed away, it was just last Sunday that I heard for the first time that he was sick, and 36 hours later he was gone. That was quick. Then we decided we're just not going to do this. It also helped that I called my brother and said, you know, we're kind of behind the eight ball down here too. You're still welcome to come. Those unsaid words were a little, so, all right, we're not going to do this. And then after that, we heard about Rick Porter and that Adam, who was scheduled to preach today, couldn't be here. So he's going to be, they're coming back Wednesday, I hope. They will be, Adam will be preaching next Sunday. That's our plan. In our case, however, it snowed something terrible on Tuesday. You all remember that? That's when we were supposed to fly out of Syracuse. My brother, who's an airline pilot, said, you know, sometimes the airlines make allowances for that. So I went online and checked, and sure enough, anybody scheduled to fly out of Syracuse on Tuesday, as we were, was allowed to rebook their tickets with a different itinerary as long as you did it prior to March 1st, and there would be no penalty and no additional cost. So we're going this week. We're leaving Tuesday, and we'll be back next Tuesday. Now, the only thing that I wish... It was in the bulletin last Sunday that we'd be gone this week. Well, we didn't put it in the bulletin that we were gone next week. I wish we had, because then people not from our church that would read the bulletin and see that last week we were going to be in Florida for the following week, and now this week we're going to be there again, I'd want them to ask, how often do you do this? And that this is where I would say, this is Congregation Appreciation Month, by the way, this is where I would say, hey, if you had the church I had, you could do this all the time. And I wouldn't even change that for them. I would let them think that we were gone both weeks. The other thing that I'm letting people think, it's too bad we couldn't do the snow tubing party tonight. That hill is faster than I have ever seen it. But for a number of reasons, we are not open today. I won't go into all that. We're open all next week if you'd like to come out, especially if you'd like to help. But the official reason that we're closing today is because Ed Zare wants us to watch the Daytona 500 this afternoon. He does not want us working on the tubing hill. I shared that at the funeral yesterday, and Rick Zare, his son, shared that he had a lot more he could say too, but there was a race on TV, and his dad wouldn't like it if he was keeping everybody there to talk about him. Thank you to all of you who helped with that memorial service yesterday. It was a challenging time. We have a lot of people gone. There were just a number of things. Some people had to work really hard to make that happen. But that's what we do. And part of that experience yesterday connects to this passage today in Jeremiah that Nelson read. And I was actually going this direction already with this passage, and then that experience yesterday just cemented that for me. I'll say more about that a little bit later. That Psalm 1 passage that was read, I enjoy that psalm. I like it. I like the idea that the person who follows the way of the Lord is always happy, and the one who doesn't follow the way of the Lord struggles. That seems like justice to me. But then I went to college and started studying the Bible for my Bible major and had a professor that said, this psalm, is this always the way it happens? That the righteous people never suffer? Well, no, that's not quite right. And people who do evil, they are always judged? They never get away with what they're doing? Well, no, that's not right. Challenged my whole belief in this psalm. And we were led to understand then that the Psalms is a collection of human beings' response up toward God. There's a lot of different directions in the Bible. A lot of it is God speaking to us as humans. A lot of it is humans speaking back to God. And then a lot of it is humans speaking to other humans. And in the book of Psalms, it's that latter category, human beings speaking to other human beings. And it's a collection of a wide array of thoughts. And so, yes, there are times when the righteous are indeed blessed and all goes well, and it's like you're growing up by a stream. But then there's times when it's not quite like that either. And I think Jeremiah expands on this just a little bit, says the same thing in this passage about being on a stream and finding strength. Verse 8, like a tree planted by the water, sending out its roots into the stream. I think Jeremiah gets a little bit more realistic and gives us a good way of how we can face the future when things are not seeming to go our way. And when we are struggling with perhaps some persecution that we hadn't planned on. The song, Come and Sit by the River, is a favorite of mine, where an old man is sitting by the river and a young man comes back home after he's been gone for a while. Those of us who have children that have moved away from home, you know how difficult that is. I'm not sure which is worse, though, when they move away or when they don't move away, but I won't go into that. But this young man comes back home and sits by this old man by the river, and then the man is saying, come and sit by the river. And the old man is sharing all of his memories of what this river used to be, and this is where he grew up, and all the relationships that he had. And now you've gone off and you've done so many other things. Come back to the roots of where you were and the value of what you had here. It's kind of a neat song. And I thought of that this morning, particularly as I thought about this memorial service that we just participated in. As you were growing up as a child, what is it that makes you so fond of that time when you were growing up? Assuming you had a good childhood, and even if your childhood struggled a little bit, I hope that there are some memories that just hold special meaning. The first time you ever did this, or the first town you ever lived in. Are you partial toward that town? Does that town still have a positive image in your mind? It does for me. That'd be Woodville, New York, if anybody wonders. Woodville is just a blip in the road now. There's hardly anything there that used to be there. But I remember how that community used to thrive, and I have these nostalgic memories of growing up there. What is it that makes that town so special? It's because it's my first memories, but I'm also remembering the relationships. I had a mother and a father who cared for me. We had a church that we went to. I'm on the cradle roll, or was, at the Woodville Mennonite Church. My grandparents went to that church. All of those people that surrounded me, many of them are gone now, and so I have this nostalgic memory. Those were my first relationships. One of the kids that I used to play with found out that he was the manager of the Herb Phillipson store in Watertown. I thought, I'm going to go see this guy. I wasn't sure what he looked like. It had been 50 years since I'd seen him. But I saw somebody walking around the store looking like they knew what they were doing and in charge, and it kind of looked like that guy. And so I went up and introduced myself, and well, it was. And he said to me, I think about you all the time. You do? I named one of my children after you, Keith. Why did he do that? I was mean to him. He was mean to me, too. We fought. But we were friends. We were probably some of the first friends that the other had. And we grew up together and we had those memories. And I haven't seen him since that day. Of course, I had the best intentions. Well, let's get together sometime and talk. Let's do that. And then it doesn't happen. Does that sound familiar? We have those community connections. And that's what I thought of yesterday in that memorial service, those connections as we were sharing about the family. And Sandy said something very nice to me. She said, Eddie would have been glad that you were here today. This was yesterday for the funeral. And we had told her that we might not be here. And in her gracious way, she said, don't stay just for this. Well, of course she would say that. But I'm glad we did. And I'm glad we were here. I'm remembering the very first funeral service that I did. As a young pastor, it was someone that I didn't know. It was a neighbor of a person who came to our church. The family that this affected didn't go to church. They didn't know who to do the funeral service. So this member of our church said, well, maybe our pastor could do that. And so that worked out. The thing that I remember, first of all, I was totally unprepared. I didn't know what to do. I didn't have that experience yet. Experience is a good teacher. So I muddled a few things together, but I was unprepared for the level of angst that I saw at that funeral. It was an older man. He'd been sick for a while. He passed away. Not that that takes away anyone's grief. We're never ready when it actually happens. We always have grief. But there seemed to be wailing of a little higher level than what I was used to. And I remember the funeral director, I thought, well, this is what it must be like to be a funeral director. As people were coming to pay their last respects, a number of persons were almost fainting at the casket and just, oh, this is terrible. And the funeral director would literally grab them and carry them out to the car waiting and then go get the next one. That was my first funeral. But are they all going to be like this? Well, no, they're not. Even though we have grief and even though we have pain, the strength that we draw from each other in that mutual experience is something of value that goes way beyond anybody's ability to understand. I think Sandy was having that yesterday. I noticed a lot of people sharing very personally with her and very tenderly. And that's what this is about. And that's why we do what we do with the meals and providing the music and all of that. I think Jeremiah, what he's writing about here, he is telling us how the world is really wired, how to experience true joy by getting our lives aligned by what's really real. And basically saying something very simple that I think we all hear over and over again, but sometimes it doesn't settle in. A lifestyle that is centered on autonomous living, self-centeredness, and self-direction ultimately is going to prove frustrating and self-defeating. That is where that is going to end up. You're going to be like a shrub in the desert, is how he writes it. And as I read a little bit more into this passage, and maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I'm not the only one if I am, because other commentaries have said the same thing. There seems to be a suggestion that Jeremiah is saying that we draw strength from one another. We thrive in a truly human, communal mutuality of persons. We're sort of wired that way. Even those of us who are introverts, if you see me sitting in the corner at a party, it's not because I don't like you, it's just because I kind of like being there by myself. But I still like being at the party, so you can invite me, but I might sit in the corner. That's my personality type. But I like, one of my uncles said once, he can barely walk, and he went to a square dance. I said, I'm surprised to see you here. I like to see people having a good time. That's me. Having a good time today? That's not a good question to ask in church. I just thought I'd throw that in. We do thrive in those situations. And I wouldn't say that yesterday we were necessarily having a good time, but we were having a meaningful time. And there was a lot of laughter. Rick was funny when he shared, Rick Zare. A lot of the personal sharing was very funny. It seems to me that Jeremiah is saying that somehow we can have the gift of strength in the midst of physical diversity. We have a choice. We can rely on ourselves or we can rely on God. In verse 8 it says, will be like a tree planted by the water, sending out its roots by the stream. Well, that all sounds good, but then Jeremiah gets real. We won't fear when the heat comes. Our leaves will stay green. In the year of drought, we're not anxious, and we do not cease to bear fruit. So in other words, heat and drought will come, regardless. But because of our strength and because of our faith, and I really like that verse where it says we won't be anxious. That just seems to be a lot of what our calling is, isn't it? We learned that as we went through a difficult time in our congregation. Our transition team thrived on not being anxious. And I was given much advice and much learning over that time from the persons that we had come to help our congregation through that time. To be non-anxious. It's a great quality that Christians have. And I saw that yesterday. There was not anxiety yesterday. There was sadness, but there was not anxiety. That first funeral I did, I think I was seeing anxiety, and it wasn't very good to see. So when we say we have a choice of relying on humans or relying on God or relying on ourselves or relying on God, I think all of us know the answer to that. Well, let's rely on God. And that's what Jeremiah would say. Rely on God. Your roots will go deep. You'll find that beautiful stream. But what does that look like when we rely on God? Does that mean just sitting there, do nothing? Wait for God to come to save us, like that story where a man is in a flood and a boat comes, and no, I'm waiting for God to save me, and then a helicopter comes to rescue him. No, I'm waiting for God to save me, and finally the water sweeps him away, and he's up in heaven, and he says, why didn't you come save me? And God said, I sent you a boat and a helicopter, you rejected both of them. You've maybe heard that story. Relying on God doesn't mean being passive, but I also think that relying on God is also relying on each other in a community. That's what this looks like. You all look like God this morning. Did you know that? Did you wonder how you look this morning? You all look like God. You really do. You know why? Because I know that if something were to happen to my family and I had a need, I could come to you with my need and you would find a way to minister to me somehow. Which is what God would do and what he does, but often through other people. And it's through other people that we find that strength. And so I wasn't quite sure how much life insurance to buy when we first got married. I had a guy that was calling me all the time trying to sell me insurance. Finally I said, well, you know what my insurance is? It's my church. If anything happens, they'll take care of me. He said, what denomination are you? Mennonite? Well, that's funny because I have a lot of Mennonites who are customers, so where are you on that line? Well, I've rethought that since. And I have bought life insurance, by the way, so sometimes I think my wife would be better off if, financially anyway, if something would happen. But then how much do you buy? And I wasn't quite sure what kind to get, and I actually talked to my father about that. And he said, well, when it comes to life insurance, it's not something you hope you ever use. And it's really not all that likely that you're going to need it, but you do need to be prepared for some. So I took that to mean at least buy a little bit. So I bought a little bit and have that with the thought that if my family needs more than that, the church will be there for them. My family will be there for them. My relatives, her relatives. That communal thing of being able to rely on each other and knowing that you're never going to be cast adrift, you're never going to be alone in the world, you're going to have friends that will be there for you. Maybe they can't solve your problems, but they will be there to be able to minister to you. That's a big deal. It's one of the nicest things that we have in the church. And I think it is good to water that plant and so it grows and so that our roots connect to each other. And as I was thinking about this message, I was thinking about that is the thing that I think people in our society miss. We live in a Western society where much is focused on the individual. Individual rights are a big deal for us. Freedom to do what we want. That's all well and good, but sometimes we miss that communal requirement of being able to take care of each other and be with each other. And then you get into those political arguments, and I don't even want to go there this morning. But I think people in our society miss that. And if they knew what we had here with each other for that, maybe they'd be interested in that. And maybe that's what draws them to our congregation. So I had a whole list of things that could draw other people to our congregation, but I'm not going to share those this morning. I'll save that for another time. What I do want to share this morning is to ask you to look within the congregation. Is there somebody here that you don't know very well? Or somebody here that you think you really don't want to know very well? Maybe you should get to know that person. Maybe you should go out of your way to give a word of encouragement or just to make a connection. There was a guy in my high school class. I went to Eastern Mennonite High School for my senior year, and I didn't like this guy. Hardly anybody did, so we weren't very nice to him. The last couple weeks of the year, I realized I was about to graduate from high school, and I probably wouldn't see many of these people again, and so I decided to at least be a little nicer person. Took me all that time, took me till 2 weeks left in the school year to decide to be a nicer person. But hey, at least I got there eventually. Well, I made friends with this guy. And he was one of the nicest, funniest guys I'd ever hung around with. And I remember thinking, even as a senior in high school, I remember thinking, I wasted all this time paying no attention to him. And what a great friend he would have been. Don't let that happen to you, especially here in the church. Is there someone that maybe you haven't connected with yet? Someone that you don't know all that well. Maybe it's time to reach out. Maybe it's time that we form groups within the church. I have some ideas on that too for another time. But I leave you with that challenge this morning, that if there's someone here that you don't know all that well, make it a point to get to know them. And I'll close with this quote that a friend of mine just posted here the other day. Never miss out on a good person that can make your life great just because they're a little different and difficult sometimes. The good ones never come easy. I think I'm going to read that again. Never miss out on a good person that can make your life great just because they're a little different or difficult sometimes. The good ones never come easy. Makes me want to be different and difficult every day, doesn't it? Would you stand, please, for the benediction? I'm going to read what I read yesterday for Ed's memorial service. It spoke to me then, and it does again this morning. From 2 Thessalonians, may our Lord Jesus Christ himself and God our Father, who loved us and through grace gives us eternal comfort and good hope, may he comfort our hearts and strengthen us in every good work and deed. Go in peace. We'll see you in a couple weeks, and this time I will tell you what Florida looked like.